It has been a while since Shirley Muldowney has joined us here on Sports Byline, and she has retired after 30 years as an NHRA Top Fuel driver, but she has taken the time to sit down and write a book, a wonderful book called Shirley Muldowney's Tales from the Track. And in the book, it says Shirley has spent her entire lifetime telling it like it is, standing up to the establishment and refusing to do anything other than in her own way, and that's exactly what this book is all about. Now, is this a tell-all book, Shirley?
No, of course not. It isn't all bucking the system, if you will, but I got back a little bit here and there, and not everywhere, but it was a fun book. Again, it's like, little tales from here and there, back from the 70s and 80s, and I had some fun with some friends. But I think it's a very positive book. There is a lot of laughs, and there's some spots that some people I know may not like, but they'll get over it. They'll get over it.
Usually when an athlete sits back and reflects, they probably think about some things they hadn't thought about in a long time. So as you sat back to put this book together, and now you remember all the things that you thought about, what are some of the things that surprised you about your wonderful career?
Well, you think back and all of a sudden you remember. You'll excuse my laryngitis here. You'll remember things that happened. And after the text was completed, I thought, holy moly, why didn't I remember that? There is so much in my 42 years in the sport of drag racing. It would have to be a much thicker book than the Tales book. But I didn't have a lot of time with it. I had a new knee, and that took time away from the project. But I think the timing was right. It'll give the racers something to complain about over possibly the next race coming up.
I would also think, Shirley, also, that when you think back, were there more good times than there were bad times?
Oh, of course. There were. I had a wonderful ride. I will always miss it. I made, wonderful friends. Some, 25 years ago that remain my friends today. Crew members that were with me 25 years in and back out of the sport and then back in again. I have a lot of nice tales to tell. I only wish I could have mentioned a good deal more people than I did.
When you think back on all of this, are you surprised at the path you ended up taking with your life? I mean, was this a path that you ever thought you'd go down?
No. It's shocking. Like I've said it before, I run into myself every day of the week when I'm out and about and doing my chores or errands or whatever it is I have to do. People know who I am, and I think it's the fact that they just like what I was able to do, drive the race car, and it's something that a lot of people wish they could do. But to say, to think back then in the late 50s and coming through the 70s and 80s that this was going to turn into what it turned into, I would have never guessed.
Let's talk about the roots. You mentioned about the 50s. Your love for racing began when you were a street racer back in the 50s. Take us all back to the beginning of Shirley Muldowney and racing.
I don't know if I can, but I was 15 years old, 16 years old, racing up and down the streets with Jack Muldowney. That's how I met my first husband, who remains my friend today. I think there's quite a bit about Jack in the book, and he was our guest in my retirement year when we ran some match races at Englishtown, New Jersey, my favorite racetrack. And it's a very, very good track, so you can go in there and really run the numbers. And it's an event that we run every year, but Jack was able to see his first 300-mile-an-hour come up on the board, to see it live. And the man was just overwhelmed. He cried. It meant so much to him. So, again, without him, I couldn't have, he taught me how to drive a car.
Well, usually a man would be threatened by a woman who can do just about anything and maybe even do it better than most men. What was it about Jack that encouraged you to go ahead and do this?
Well, we did it together as a form of recreation. We raced the car that we drove to work. We didn't have any money. We were just two kids. Took our little boy to the racetrack on Wednesday night in diapers, and again, it was a hobby. And I just took it to the next level, and then to the next level. And then I went into nitro racing in 1971 and never looked back. I did move out away from Schenectady, where Jack, where we, you know, lived. I moved to the Detroit area and made a major change in my life. And you know, I'm happy that I made that decision. But I'm very happy that Jack Muldowney remained my friend.
From the late 50s into the middle 60s, you raced all sorts of different cars, including some of the experimental ones. What were some of those experimental ones?
Well, a factory experimental car for Chrysler. And I didn't own the car. I drove it for a white-collar worker that was afraid to drive it. You know, ran in the 11 seconds at 130 miles an hour. But you do that on some of the racetracks that we ran. You were actually at that time, at that speed, taking your life in your hands. So, you know, it's now that the cars run 330 miles an hour, my fastest was 327. You know, that's when you start to pay attention to what you're doing.
What were some of the early funny stories about your career, in your career? Well, what were some of the things that happened to you that put a smile on Shirley Muldowney's face?
Just too many to recall. Just the traveling back and forth, you know, making the California tour every year and then the Northwest tour and, you know, doing it on a shoestring. And the many things that we did to survive, funny and both funny and heartbreaking.
Such as?
Oh, it's just hard to settle on any one thing. But the, you know, the only time I was upside down in all my years was in 1984. That was, you know, the big accident, and I didn't walk away, but I survived it and was able to go back and drive the race car again, so I could make a living. And that truly, a lot of good came out of that in terms of making the sport better for the drivers.
I want to also ask you about the early challenges you faced. You know, when you're 16, 17 years old, you're pretty much oblivious to prejudice. But at what point do you remember the first time you were told no, you couldn't do something in this sport?
I don't even remember who said that. But a lot of people were for me, and I did have support, but not anything like the ladies have today. It's pretty much, you know, the doors are wide open, and it's much easier for women if you have the wallet to go along with the desire. Then you're probably going to go places. But to go out and consistently win races and back it up with championships, that's a very tough thing to do. I don't even know how I did it. I'm glad that I was a hard nose and a little lady that would stand her ground. Most of the time I had to do that, and then there were times I was wrong. So I learned a lot. The sport gave me a good deal more than I gave it.
Well, I know you received a letter from the NHRA's technical director, Jack Hart, saying, and I quote, "You've never done anything that would entitle you to compete at a race as prestigious as an NHRA national event." Your reaction?
Word for word, yes. I think I still have that letter.
What was your reaction to that?
I flipped out. I was working as a little answer-the-phone clerk-type position at a newspaper, a Hearst newspaper in Albany, New York. And they as a group, the sports department, jumped all over that right from the beginning and backed me up with a major Sunday supplement cover to cover, and then backed up the fact that NHRA did issue me a license, take it back, and then reissued it again, which, unknown to me, excluded me from national event competition. I only found that out is when I started trying to submit entry. So I had to win them over, which I did. They realized that I certainly was advantageous as far as attracting fans and women in the sport, and I could drive the race car. That's what they were afraid of. So once they realized that I was, you know, could get the job done, they relaxed their attitude and supported me from that time on. I can't say that they were always against me, because they weren't, just in the beginning.
Was that the best thing that could have happened to you, is to tell you no?
Probably. Yeah. Well, I just didn't know any better. I was just incredibly lucky.
And I might point out to people that she followed that up with a contact with Steve Evans, who told her, we'll accept your application to race at Englishtown. Just show up. We'll take a break. Come back on the other side. Shirley Muldowney is with us. We're talking about her book as we continue on Sports Byline.